Somewhere up, and you beat the mind back by chanting and engaging in devotional service. And then by evening comes, you sit down with devotees and you chant Hare Krishna and hear about Krishna, and you actually feel thankful. I'm really glad I chanted Hare Krishna today and tried to serve Krishna today. You can feel the waves of transcendental peace flowing in. It's not that Krishna consciousness has no rewards, it's all struggling now for some hereafter. No. Immediately you can feel satisfaction, just like someone who's hungry immediately feels satisfaction upon eating. But if we've done all the things we're supposed to do, and we haven't done the things we're not supposed to do, by the time the evening comes, after a day of trying to serve Krishna, we feel such peace. It's like the waves rolling in on the ocean. Similarly, you feel the waves of transcendental peace and Krishna consciousness rolling through. But you know, the problem is our minds just can't accept that simply by chanting Hare Krishna we're going to be happy. So our minds like to ruin everything. Oh, you need this, you need that. This is the problem, that's the problem. You're not getting this, you're not getting that. In this way, our mind is the worst enemy. It refuses to let us peacefully serve Krishna. But that same enemy mind can become the friend if we start to think, how can I please Krishna best in my situation? That same wild, wicked mind, which is always trying to convince you that you've got to be the enjoyer and controller, that same mind can become your friend if you start to think, how can I improve my service to Krishna? Another thing you can try is when you're looking at yourself and the world, you try to get some realization of how you don't own anything. It's actually a kind of a unique and very refreshing experience when you realize that the atmosphere around you, which you're so accustomed to claiming as yours, well, if you just understand it belongs to Krishna, immediately there's peace and a refreshing transcendental awareness in Krishna consciousness. You see, we try to, let's put it this way, whether we are conscious of it or not, we try to extend a sphere of our proprietorship around us, like a shell. So you actually feel like you control the atmosphere immediately around you. It's yours. You have like a Brahmajyoti or an effulgence around you that it's all part of you. And you don't want anyone to enter into your sphere of influence, you know, without you giving permission. So you naturally feel that you control, or at least you predominate over the immediate atmosphere around you. Everyone like carries a house with them. And you feel that what's right around you has got to respond most of the time to what you want. That's why people like homes, first of all. In your own home, everything just responds the way you want. The women are like that about homes. The men are like that about cars. The women see the house as an extension of her body. The man sees the car as the extension of his body. So it's got to be your world. Your house, your car. You're inside of the house or the car. So even when we're not in a house or car, we carry that subtle feeling with us that around me is a world that belongs to me. Sometimes you can observe this in families, if you ever try watching them. The mother and the father, while they're into relating to their kids, they view the kids as extensions of their bodies. They kind of feel like they've contributed something because they've got little tykes running at their side. Kind of feel like you've made your mark in the world. There's this little one who's depending on you. So you kind of feel that you have a purpose in life. You can train the kid. You can chastise the kid. The kid's always depending on you for protection. Up until a certain age, the kid's convinced that you can protect him or her from anything, up to a certain age. So that makes you feel good. You feel you have a purpose in life. My kid. My kids. And you surround yourself with them until they drive you crazy. Everything in our material little atmosphere is like that. It's our little bubble shell around us. It's ours. It's my atmosphere. You kind of exude. You know what exude means? You kind of emanate feelings of proprietorship around you, like vibrations of proprietorship around you. I notice sometimes persons, before they walk into a different place, they shoot their vibrations of proprietorship ahead of them, and then they walk in. You know what I mean? You ever notice that? They kind of shoot their minds in first to capture the place, then they physically walk in. If someone's very mental, you can see that happening. This is all lust. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna explains that the living entity is covered by different degrees of lust. Just like fire is covered by smoke, mirror is covered by dust. Oh, what's the other one?
Embryo
covered by the womb. So the love of Krishna, the love of God, has become perverted into lust. Now, the process of bhakti yoga is to train us to exchange that lusty attitude of proprietorship for an attitude of service to Krishna. We want it so that wherever we go, we start to feel opportunities for serving Krishna. That's Vaikuntha. Everywhere you look, everything you hear and see is an opportunity to serve Krishna. The atmosphere is just bubbling with opportunities for serving Krishna. That's real happiness. But because we are contaminated, as soon as we think an opportunity bubbling with service to Krishna, we say, oh, don't I have enough of that already? I do my share. We don't know what the spiritual world is. The spiritual world means endless opportunities to serve Krishna. So, the process of bhakti yoga is meant to prepare you for that, for endless opportunities to serve Krishna. And, as we always have been saying, that service to Krishna begins with the tongue. Sevan mukini jivadal swayamiva sprachita. In Kali Yuga especially, all devotional service is founded upon shravanam kirtanam Vishnu, hearing and chanting about the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So it's interesting, you know, to feel these mental vibrations of proprietorship. It's not simply that you're claiming proprietorship over your body. You're actually sending out vibes a certain distance around you. Your bubble of your own world around you, in which you feel, it's mine, it's me. And then, if you can extend that bubble into a room, into a house, into a car, into other family members, then you really feel like you're substantial. My bubble is so big. The more pregnant your world is, the more of a success you feel. It's all mine. Leave. So the world trains us that this attitude is perfection. The more pregnant your world is, the bigger the bubble, the more successful you are. Krishna consciousness is the opposite. Nothing is ours, everything belongs to Krishna. In exchange for that proper attitude, we get unlimited opportunities to serve Krishna. So let's read from the Krishna book. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. Oh, I haven't seen you for a while. You're doing all right? Healthy? How about you now? How old are you now? 13. Only is it a wild years, huh? No? Yes? We've been reading about Krishna entering Mathura. Yesterday, where did we finish? The breaking of the bow. Now the wrestling match has started. We've been sampling how Krishna is enjoying in Mathura, raising Cain, turning the city upside down, killing off demons, giving the girls a thrill. We've been discussing all that. Krishna can perfectly reciprocate our love in 5 major relationships and 7 indirect relationships. So you want to be interested in Krishna because he can perfectly reciprocate your love in 12 ways. Sometimes we say that we misconstrue that Krishna consciousness doesn't have enough emotion. That's not true. Everything about Krishna consciousness deals with emotion. It's just that in the beginning stages, our emotions are focused simply on how to please Krishna under regulation. In the advanced stages, our emotions become of a spontaneous nature, of immediate spontaneous planning to serve Krishna. Emotions are always there. The killing of the elephant, Kuvalaya Pida. So now Krishna's going to have fun killing the elephant. After taking their baths and finishing all other morning duties, Krishna and Balaram could hear the beating of the kettle drums in the wrestling camp. You hear the sound? Krishna book is full of sights, sounds, smells. It's a festival for the senses, so you should read Krishna book like that with all your senses. Hear the sounds, smell the smells, see the sights. Krishna and Balaram, they're hearing the sound of the kettle drums. They immediately prepared themselves to proceed to the spot to see the fun. Now, what's special about Krishna and Balaram going to this spot to see the fun? Do you know? Have you read the Krishna book?
No.
What are you doing? Why is it so special they're going to the spot to see the fun? What's the ironic thing about it?
You're going to create the fun.
Well, more something else.
Going to be the destruction?
Yeah. The whole wrestling act was arranged for them to be killed by the wrestlers. But Krishna and Balaram did this. Say, yeah, we'll go there for the fun. Suppose someone's made this huge arrangement to kill you. And meanwhile, you and your mate say, well, we'll just go there for the fun of it. This is Krishna. When Krishna and Balaram reached the gate of the wrestling camp, they saw a big elephant of the name Kuvalayapid being tended by a caretaker. The caretaker was deliberately blocking their entrance by keeping the elephant in front of the gateway. Krishna could understand the purpose of the caretaker, and he prepared himself by tightening his dress before combating the elephant. This is Krishna's artistic style. Many times before he goes to kill a demon, he adjusts his clothes to make sure he's... Not that Krishna is ever untidy. But this is just a different expression of his perfection. One way his clothes are like this, the next way his clothes are like that, but it's all perfect. Who can remember another example of Krishna tightening his or adjusting his clothes before going into some kind of battle? Yes, before he jumped in and killed Kali, before he jumped in to the lake, got up on a tree, adjusted his belt, and then dived in to the poisonous lake. Krishna's always conscious there could be girls watching, so. Gotta adjust everything. Yes! Krishna is a supreme lover. You're just gonna have to get used to that. You can't compete. You can only assist in Krishna's pastimes. You can't compete. All the love is meant for Krishna. Krishna began to address the caretaker in a very grave voice, as resounding as a cloud. You've all heard clouds thunder. So Krishna's voice was like that. You miscreant caretaker! Give way and let me pass through the gate. If you block my way, I shall send you and your elephant to the house of death personified. The caretaker, being thus insulted by Krishna. See, Krishna does everything. He insults, you know? Everything. Because he's not a boring God. God is the most exciting. The caretaker, being thus insulted by Krishna, became very angry. And in order to challenge Krishna, as was previously planned, he provoked the elephant to attack. Have you ever been attacked by an elephant? Now you're going to hear how Krishna handles it. Now you're going to get the play-by-play account, so concentrate on all the details here. The elephant then moved before Krishna like inevitable death. It rushed towards Krishna and tried to catch him with its trunk. But Krishna very dexterously moved behind the elephant. So you see, first the elephant tries to grab Krishna with his trunk. Then Krishna goes behind the elephant. Being able to see only to the end of its nose, the elephant could not see Krishna hiding behind its legs. Krishna moved so fast. The elephant was moving forward to get Krishna with his trunk. Krishna went around the back. So the elephant couldn't see that Krishna was around the back hiding behind the leg. He's still, where's Krishna with his trunk? elephant obviously was sent his trunk around to try to capture Krishna. And then Krishna again very quickly escaped capture. And he again ran behind the elephant and caught its tail. Holding the elephant by its tail, Krishna began to pull it. And with very great strength, he dragged the elephant for at least 25 yards. 25 meters. Just as Garuda drags an insignificant snake. Then Krishna pulled the elephant from this side to that. He's holding the tail, the elephant. He says, drag the elephant 25 yards. Now he's going to pull the elephant from side to side, holding its tail. Just like he used to pull the tail of a calf in his childhood. After this, Krishna went in front of the elephant and gave it a strong slap. He then slipped away from the elephant's view and ran to its back again. Then, falling down on the ground, Krishna placed himself in front of the elephant's two legs. What's this? Krishna falls down on the ground in front of the elephant's two legs? A dangerous position. The elephant can just stomp him. No. By Krishna falling down in front of the elephant's two legs, he tripped it, and the elephant fell. They used to do this in American football. They do that in rugby. Someone's running down the field, and you throw your body right at their knee level so they tumble over. Yes, this is what Krishna did to the elephant. Instead of Krishna getting crushed, he actually tricked the elephant. This little delicate boy, 12 years old, Krishna, he's done this. Krishna immediately got up, but the elephant, thinking he was still lying down, tried to push an ivory tusk through the body of Krishna by forcibly stabbing it into the ground. He didn't really see living enemy has imperfect senses. The elephant still thinks Krishna's laying on the ground. So he's going to stab Krishna's body with a tusk. But Krishna's already gotten up. Although the elephant was harassed and angry, the caretaker, riding on his head, tried to provoke it further. This is the nature of demons. They're always provoking one another. Especially how to get rid of Krishna. The elephant then rushed madly towards Krishna. As soon as it came within reach, Krishna caught hold of the trunk and pulled the elephant down. When the elephant and caretaker fell, Krishna jumped up on the elephant's back and broke it, and killed the caretaker also. Routine. After killing the elephant, Krishna took an ivory tusk on his shoulder. Now you're going to hear how Krishna's beauty is described. Decorated with drops of perspiration and sprinkled with the blood of the elephant, he felt very blissful. And thus he began to proceed towards the wrestling camp. Lord Balaram took the other tusk of the elephant on his shoulder. Accompanied by their cowherd boyfriends, they entered the arena. So here's this band of cowherd boys from Vrindavan, led by Krishna and Balaram. Krishna and Balaram both have an ivory elephant's tusk they're carrying on their shoulder. Yeah, Krishna just killed the elephant. He's decorated with drops of perspiration, sprinkled with elephant's blood, feeling very blissful. When Krishna entered the wrestling arena with Balaram and their friends, he appeared differently to different people according to their different relationships, rasas, with him. Now, this is a very famous picture, because everything in Krishna the book is very extraordinary. But this scene, it's showing you how Krishna entering into the wrestling arena is seen by all different types of persons according to their vision. Krishna is the reservoir of all pleasure and all kinds of rasas, both favorable and unfavorable. He appeared to the wrestlers exactly like a thunderbolt. To the people in general, he appeared as the most beautiful personality. To the females, he appeared to be the most attractive male, Cupid personified, and thus increased their lust. The cowherd men who were present there looked upon Krishna as their own kinsman coming from the same village of Vrindavan. The Kshatriya kings who were present saw him as the strongest ruler. To the parents of Krishna, Nanda and Yashoda, he appeared to be the most loving child. No matter what Krishna did, Mother Yashoda and Nanda Maharaj just saw him as their child. Here he's just killed an elephant. He's done so many things in Mathura. He's agitating all the girls of Mathura. They fainted upon seeing him. His beauty, the girls of Mathura fainted, but Mother Yashoda and Nanda Maharaj think he's just a little boy. Because that's their relationship, their rasa with Krishna. Tukamsa, the king of the Bhoja dynasty, Krishna appeared to be death personified. To the unintelligent, he appeared to be an incapable personality. To the yogis present, he appeared to be the super soul. To the members of the Vrishni dynasty, he appeared to be the most celebrated descendant, thus appreciated differently by different kinds of men present. Krishna entered the wrestling arena with Balaram and his cowherd boyfriends. Having heard that Krishna had already killed the elephant Kuvalayapi, Kamsa knew beyond doubt that Krishna was formidable. He thus became very much afraid of him. Krishna and Balaram had long hands. They were beautifully dressed, and they were attractive to all the people assembled there. They were dressed as if they were going to act on a dramatic stage, and they drew the attention of all the people. So in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Yeya tam mam prabhajate, tams tadaiva bhajamyaham. As you reciprocate to me, I act back towards you. So this wrestling arena example is very good because it shows how the one Krishna is seen differently according to the relationship of the person looking. Kamsa sees death personified, the wrestlers see a thunderbolt, the yogis see the super soul, Nanda and Yashoda Maharaj see our darling little child, the women see the most attractive male, Cupid personified. The cowherd men see their own family member. The Kshatriya kings see the strongest ruler. Everybody's seeing according to their station or according to their position in relation to Krishna. These positions in relation to Krishna are all described in Nectar of Devotion. The citizens of Mathura city, who saw Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, became very pleased and began to look on his face with insatiable glances, as if they were drinking the nectar of heaven. This is one thing you do when you look at Krishna. You lick up the beauty of the Lord with your eyes. You can remember this the next time you see the deities. You lick up their beauty with your eyes. You drink their beauty with the eyes. Seeing Krishna gave them so much pleasure that it appeared that they were not only drinking the nectar of seeing his face, but were smelling the aroma and licking up the taste of his body, and were embracing him and Balaram with their arms. They began to talk among themselves about the two transcendental brothers. For a long time they had heard of the beauty and activities of Krishna and Balaram, but now they were personally seeing them face to face. Of course, remember, hearing about Krishna is actually not different from seeing Krishna. You get the same result by hearing about Krishna that you do by seeing Krishna. They thought that Krishna and Balaram were two plenary incarnations of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Narayan, who had appeared in Vrindavan. Of course, Krishna is the origin of all incarnations. The citizens of Mathura began to recite Krishna's pastimes, his birth as the son of Vasudeva, his being taken into the care of Nanda Maharaj and his wife in Gokula, and all those events leading to his coming to Mathura. They spoke of the killing of the demon Kutana, as well as the killing of Trinavata, who came as a whirlwind. They also recalled the deliverance of the twin brothers from within the Yamala Arjun trees. The citizens of Mathura spoke among themselves. Shankasura, Keshi, Dhenukasura, and many other demons were killed by Krishna and Balaram in Vrindavan. So you see the citizens of Mathura, they're engaged in Krishna Katha. They're remembering and describing the pastimes of the Lord. This is the advantage of being around devotees. You always have an opportunity to remember and glorify Krishna. So besides the austerity of having to be around the same people day after day, year after year, you should also realize that you're in the association of persons who can remind you to hear about Krishna. So you should try to encourage your associates to talk and think of Krishna. That's why we recommend family life based on hearing about Krishna. We were telling the husbands yesterday at Uli's house that they should get their wives to read Krishna book to them. And vice versa, the wives should get the husbands to read Krishna book to them. Krishna also saved all the cowherd men of Vrindavan from devastating fire. He chastised the Kaliya snake in the water of Yamuna, and he curbed the false pride of the heavenly king Indra. Krishna held up the great Govardhan hill in one hand for 7 continuous days and saved all the people of Gokula from incessant rain, hurricane, and windstorm. Krishna does things. He's active. Activity in perfection. Unlimited activity in perfection. They also began to remember other enlivening activities. The damsels of Vrindavan were so pleased by seeing Krishna's beauty and participating in his activities that they forgot the purpose of material existence. By seeing and thinking of Krishna, they forgot all sorts of material fatigue. So that happens to us sometimes when we're so absorbed in Krishna consciousness, we forget the purpose of material existence. But then sometimes we get afraid. Oh no, what's happening to me? I'm losing my material stability. I'm becoming swept away by Krishna. Who knows where I'll wind up? What will happen to my practical needs? The first practical need is to always think of Krishna. The Mathura citizens discussed the dynasty of Yadu, saying that because of Krishna's appearance in this dynasty, the Yadus would remain the most celebrated family in the whole universe. While they were thus talking about the activities of Krishna and Balaram, they heard the vibrations of different bands announcing the wrestling match. So you always get such a wide perspective in hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita, Krishna book. You are presented with events in the context of at least the whole universe. Now, how many people do you know in the so-called ordinary world that say, You'll be the most fortunate family in the whole universe. People don't have that big of an understanding. But to think of the whole universe from the Vedic point of view is being very small-minded. But today, if you say to somebody, this is the best thing in the whole universe, no one takes you seriously because people can't conceive of any kind of life beyond Earth. But in Krishna consciousness, if you say, this is the best family or the best spot in the whole universe, it's considered no big thing, because we know that this universe is just a drop in an ocean of countless universes. And all the universes put together are just a small fraction of Krishna's total energy. While they were thus talking about the activities of Krishna and Balaram, they heard the vibrations of different bands announcing the wrestling match. See, they had bands then too, music. The famous wrestler, Chanura, then began to talk with Krishna and Balaram. My dear Krishna and Balaram, he said, we have heard about your past activities. You are great heroes, and therefore the king has called you. We have heard that your arms are very strong. The king and all the people present here desire to see a display of your wrestling abilities. A citizen should be obedient and please the mind of the ruling king. Acting in that way, the citizen attains all kinds of good fortune. One who does not care to act obediently is made unhappy because of the king's anger. You are cowherd boys, and we have heard that while tending your cows in the forest, you enjoy wrestling with each other. We wish, therefore, for you to join us in wrestling, so that all the people present here, along with the king, will be pleased. So, you got to remember, yes, Krishna and Balaram would wrestle with their playmates in the forest, but they're just young boys. These wrestlers, they're like mountains. They're giants. And the evil King Kamsa had arranged this one-sided match so that Krishna and Balaram would be killed. He thought this was a clever way of killing them. In this way, no one could accuse him of anything, because he was just a wrestling match, and yeah, the boys participated. They got killed. It's not the king's fault. Krishna immediately understood the purpose of Chanura's statements, and he prepared to wrestle with him. But according to the time and circumstance, he spoke as follows: you are the subject of the king of Bhoja, and you live in the jungle. We are also indirectly his subjects, and we try to please him as far as possible. This offer of wrestling is a great favor of his, but the fact is we are simply boys. We sometimes play in the forest of Vrindavan with our friends who are our own age. We think that to combat persons of equal age and strength is good for us, but to fight great wrestlers like you would not be good for the audience. It would contradict their religious principles. Krishna thus indicated that the celebrated strong wrestlers should not challenge Krishna and Balaram to fight. In reply to this, Chanura said, my dear Krishna, we can understand that you are neither a child nor a young man. You are transcendental to everyone, as is your big brother Balaram. You have already killed the elephant Kuvayapi, who is capable of fighting and defeating other elephants. You have killed them in a wonderful way. Because of your strength, it behooves you to compete with the stronger wrestlers amongst us. I, therefore, wish to wrestle with you, and your elder brother Balaram will wrestle with Mushti. So they had some slight understanding that Krishna wasn't ordinary, but they were demons, and they knew our job is to kill Krishna. On the one hand, they're saying, Krishna, you're transcendental to everyone. You're not a child or a young man. On the other hand, they said, we're going to kill you. Let's go. This is a confused attitude of demons. And when we live in a society controlled by demoniac thinking, We are also confused. We talk about how we're spirit, but then we simply try to satisfy the body. We come up with all sorts of concoctions that we're actually both spirit and matter, therefore we've got to satisfy the matter as well as the spirit. All sorts of nutty things like that we say. And we present ourselves as if we're in control of the whole cosmic system. I decided to take this body, this particular body, and I chose my parents, and I chose all the lessons I'm going to have to learn. We say nutty things like that. We can't see that we're simply in prison, dragged here and there against our will. You see, once you jump into the ocean of material existence, you're just swept away. Now, you did make the choice. You chose to jump in. But once you jump in, you're swept away. You don't know where you're going to wind up. So it's not that you have no independence. You misused your independence by jumping into the ocean of material existence. After that, but we're so crazy that while we're being swept away in the ocean of material existence, we like to comment on the different styles of suffering in the ocean while we're being swept away. You know, the Hooker Falls example, right? Everyone knows, okay. You know the Hooker Falls example? You haven't heard it. You know where the Hooker Falls are, right? You been there? Okay. So let's say it's you. You're in a canoe, and you're deciding to go over the Hooker Falls. And you know before you get to the falls, there's this narrow channel of water coming from the... Is it a river or a lake? A lake. Okay. Somebody actually did this, by the way. You know? Okay. You read about it.
Oh, I finally found the person.
Okay. See, you knew the person. What was his ambition?
I heard a pretty self-destructive person. Mm-hmm.
How is that different from anybody else? Isn't everybody self-destructive?
Yeah. Yeah.
So what? Did he talk to you before he did it?
No, he didn't.
Oh, they knew he was going to do it, but he just told them. So then what?
Well, the first time he was going to do it, they were successful in that, and then he came back.
So what happened to him?
He left.
Huh?
He left. He went to Chile.
Oh, what happened when he...
Over there.
What's that?
He went to Chile afterwards. And
what happened when he got to the bottom? Is this the same one who did it with the buses of Japanese tourists watching?
I'm not sure.
Oh, okay. That, so this guy, if he happened to live, the one who went down, the one who went over with the busload of Japanese tourists watching, he didn't live. So, by his independence, he chose to go over the falls in a boat. Then you get to the bottom of the falls, and everything is out of your control. So you're struggling. Now what shall we do? Shall we point out the different styles of struggling? Right. But if you are a typical person today, you focus on the style of the struggling. You would say, look, he went down under the water that time for 60 whole seconds, more than anyone else. Look at the particular way he's gasping for air. How unique, how artistic, creative. Look how he's using his intuition to blow water out of his mouth and cough. Right? Well, I wonder what brand of swim trunks he's wearing. Is it Calvin Klein or...
Adidas.
So this is what material life is like. Everybody is going down, but you pay attention to their styles of suffering. You understand? So what to do?
Huh?
What to do? Huh? So, what's the plan for that? Hmm? Oh, you do that?
Mm-hmm.
Or are you just saying that?
I'm
just writing that out completely. Oh, we all are too, don't worry. We're all new at this too. Actually, everyone here is new to it. We're just trying to find out about Krishna. It's a great discovery every day. So, any questions or anything? Next is. No one has any questions about anything? Yes, but at the same time, he likes to be surprised. So he has his own pastime energy called Leela Shakti that arranges things so Krishna can not have to figure everything out because that would spoil all the fun. If you know everything, a lot of times it's not as much fun as if you're surprised. So Krishna arranges to surprise himself. Just like sometimes, for example, you see little kids pretending, they're playing a game, they pretend they don't know something and they surprise themselves. And Krishna does like that. All for his pleasure. If you know everything, you also know how to surprise yourself. If Krishna is infinite in knowledge, he also knows how to surprise himself and how to act like he doesn't know something, even though he knows everything.
How come that the gods not everyone perceived him as it doesn't know who God is?
No.
The various killings of demons, there's usually a crime which someone else does it, and through Krishna. So how did the citizens perceive him then? As a criminal, or the ones which didn't see him as a...
The demons saw him as a criminal. He was breaking the law of Kamsa, the king, so they thought he's a criminal. Actually, Kamsa is the biggest criminal, but they saw Krishna like that. That's why so many of these demons that Krishna killed, they were always telling him, you better follow the law of Kamsa if you know what's good for you. So Krishna more or less told him, yeah, I know what's good for me, and he killed him. Whether you are killed by Krishna or embraced by Krishna, there's always benefit. Of course, we are advised to become embraced by Krishna. Still, even if you're killed by Krishna, any way you come in contact with Krishna, you're benefited. When Krishna was present 5,000 years ago, very few persons knew he was the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Very few. That just goes to show you that seeing is not believing. You need knowledge.
But it perceives as killings of these personalities as a wondrous activity is still
yes.
a killing and a sinful in that sense.
No, because,
wondrous
because anybody pious knew that these persons killed were demons. Anyway, they had challenged Krishna. They wanted to kill Krishna. It's not that Krishna had sought them out. They were innocent persons. They were always agitating to try to kill Krishna. You see, once Krishna leaves Vrindavan and enters Mathura and Dwarka, he starts acting like the son of a prince. In Vrindavan, he acts like the son of a cowherd boy. This is why one demon, Shishupal, he, at the Rajasuya sacrifice, he got very angry when Sahadeva, one of the Pandavas, selected Krishna, Sahadeva Nakula, selected Krishna to be the most worshipable person of the sacrifice. So Shishupal the demon couldn't tolerate this. He said, we don't even know what caste this Krishna belongs to. Sometimes he acts like a prince, sometimes he acts like a farmer. Who is he? He made a big speech. There's so many great sages and yogis here. Any one of them could be chosen to be the most worshipable person in this sacrificial arena. But we have listened to the words of this inexperienced boy, Sahadev, who has chosen Krishna. He made a whole demoniac speech. Do we have it here? I'll read it for you. You have a Krishna book? Second volume in this house?
Mm-hmm.
Don't have a whole Krishna book in this house? You don't read Krishna book?
No.
Where is it? At work?
Uh-huh.
Oh, can you get it? Hi! So we'll read Shishupal's speech condemning Krishna. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. How much do you know about Krishna?
Why, I get the impression of jumping through these hoops and being tested by all these people. Why would he think that's good?
He's having fun.
Why are you doing that?
Huh? Yeah. He's having fun. Krishna is a supreme enjoyer. Same one. So you're asking, why is he slaying all these demons?
Why is he putting himself in that position in the first place? It's just better than everything.
It's fun! Doing whatever you like. Wouldn't you like to do whatever you like? But you can't.
You're just killing them for the purpose of killing.
Krishna is a supreme enjoyer. He dances, he romances, he sports. He acts like the most adorable baby. He kills everything. Why not? But everything belongs to Krishna, so he can do what he likes with everything. Everything is Krishna's energy. Krishna's killing everyone anyway as time. So whether he does it this way or that way, but it's more fun sometimes for him to get into it personal. Time is the impersonal manifestation of Krishna. And it creates exciting subject matter for us. But you're making a mistake if you see all these people that are being killed as separate from Krishna. They're his energy. So it's just like little kids. They can do with their toys what they like. So everything belongs to Krishna. He can do what he likes. And of course, the person doesn't really die because the soul is eternal. And because they're killed personally by Krishna, they get a spiritual benediction in their next life. Any way you come in contact with Krishna is to your benefit. Now, it's not recommended that you become such a ferocious demon that Krishna wants to kill you. Those are only very special demons. It's much easier to become Krishna conscious, you know? Now you have to analyze your life to see how your lifestyle keeps you from being Krishna conscious. You have to analyze like that and see how your lifestyle keeps you in ignorance. You ever thought like that?
Sometimes I probably don't like to look too closely at my life.
Why not?
Being afraid of what I'll see, probably.
Well, take a close look, knowing that you can get something better if you want. We were discussing this the other night, I think. When you look in the mirror, you should look and see someone and say, but you see, you should say, I am the supreme failure at enjoyment. To try that. Shall we bring you a mirror? Hold it up. Who is that? That is a supreme failure at enjoying. You can put a sign on your mirror at home. Try it. Your friends will think you're really off the deep end, huh? But just because you failed at being the enjoyer doesn't mean Krishna has failed. Krishna is the unlimited, infinite enjoyer. Now you're supposed to get your enjoyment by assisting in Krishna's pleasure, not by competing with Krishna. So, in this life, what we've done is tried to compete with Krishna. We try to be the center of all the relationships. We try to have different loving exchanges with everyone. Parents, friends, lovers, this, that. We try to be the center of everything. And we fail miserably. We can't do anything for anybody. Have you realized that? But you pretend. Because you want sense gratification, so you pretend. Yeah, I can do something for you. You can do something for me. Yeah. You pretend like that. It's all business based on cheating. To find out what is genuine reality, you have to become aware of the activities of the spirit soul in its original situation. Now, I'm sure you've understood that you're different from the body, right? So what is it then that the soul does in its original situation when it's free from the body? Doing what? You need a more specific idea of that, because you're not Krishna, you're part of Krishna. Therefore, for you, fun is simply the soul in pure relationship with Krishna. Now, you were hearing about Krishna. Now, that's not you. You get your fun by participating in Krishna's pleasure as a helper, like a stagehand. Actually, by being a stagehand in Krishna's pastime, you get the same pleasure that Krishna gets. But we're so contaminated, we think, unless I'm the master and controller, I can't enjoy. So bhakti yoga, the yoga of transcendental loving service to the Lord, is meant to break us out of this mentality that I am the master, and it gets us to taste the reality of being the transcendental servant. So the activities of the soul in perfection are the most confidential knowledge. But some people think that when this body is finished, then the soul just loses its individuality. And you supposedly merge into everything and you are the oneness. This is just nonsense. I was hearing Srila Prabhupada, see that's his picture up there. He was giving this example, that when you're driving in a car, you're not the car, you're the person inside the vehicle. Similarly, when you're in this body as soul, you're not the body, but you're using the body as a vehicle. So when you're driving the car, your individuality is fully displayed. Right turn, left turn, go here, go there. This is all an expression of individuality. Now, why is it you think that as soon as when you get out the car, you lose your individuality? Inside the car, you have so much individuality. Left turn, right turn, go here, there, this speed, that speed. When you get out of the car, does that mean your individuality is gone? Just because you came out of the car, the vehicle? Similarly, why do you think that you lost your individuality when you come out of the body? Good example, huh? Mm-hmm. Did you understand that? So everyone's happy? No one's got any problems? This world is very problematic, but you chant Hare Krishna, you try to serve Krishna, keep yourself in a pure condition, and in spite of the craziness of this world, you can become Krishna conscious and you'll be happy. So what are your 13-year-old girlfriends doing?
We'll be watching TV.
Yes. Exciting, huh? Not chasing boys yet? Another year, huh? Better to chase Krishna, you'll never be disappointed. One of Krishna's queens was talking like that. Krishna, these ordinary men, they're just bags of flesh decorated with mustaches and beards. In Vrindavan, the cowherd girls, the gopis, they warned, if you're all interested in maintaining your attachment for society, friendship, and love, don't go see Krishna. He's standing on the bank of the Jamuna River in his threefold bending stance. Just by looking at him, you'll forget all about mundane society, friendship, and love. And forget all about it. So, if you don't want to forget all that, then don't go see Krishna. It's always so peaceful after we read Krishna book, isn't it? So you all can do this in your homes. All right, we'll chant a little bit and we'll what? Have a little prasad here.